Welcome to the Oddity Shop, where the bizarre is always on sale.
Welcome in, you oddballs. This is your curator, Kara, with your other curator, Zach.
Hello.
And this is the Oddity Shop podcast, where we
tell you weird, creepy, odd, strange, bizarre, paranormal, psychotic, mysterious, unsolved stories from around the globe.
I like how you said paranormal. Paranormal.
Paranormal.
Psychotics.
I was trying to add some new ones in there and make it longer than usual. I want people to really know what they're getting into.
Psychotic.
Paranormal, as I'm wearing my cat shirt.
Paranormal. There you go.
There we go. Do you have anything to say to me today?
Is it your birthday?
Yesterday was.
I hate this. Happy belated birthday.
Thank you so much. It you know, in all fairness, and I think we're going to try to fix this issue soon.
Yeah.
But it is only February
we'll
for
see.
Us. But she should have known what date this was coming out. Whatever.
You didn't know my birthday date.
That's true.
Episode.
You're right.
Happy fucking birthday. Well,
thank you. Thank you. I hope it's a good one. Dude, we need to go to a paranormal convention. What is wrong with us?
Just the way you said that. I hope it's a good one.
I hope it's a good one. When you're all listening to this, ask me. Ask me if it was a good one.
Ask me. Ask me. Well, we might be going to
We might be already have gone to one, too. We're contemplating going to one 12 days before this airs. So, you know, you might see some pictures of that, too. That's about all I got. What do you got?
I asked you, like, I don't know, 2 weeks, whatever, it doesn't matter. I'm like, hey, do your stickers peel off of your water bottle? And you're like, if you get blah, 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 sometimes they do, but it's fine. And I'm like, okay. And then I sat there for like 2 hours contemplating putting stickers in my water bottle and having like the worst anxiety about it. Don't know why. I even went to, and I have like all my stickers. I have ropes hanging in front of me, like rope lights.
Yeah.
And I have them just like all hanging from it. So like, you know what I mean? Like I look at them all the time when I'm recording. But anyway, I was like, oh, I could put them on my water bottle, whatever. Then I was like, no, that's giving me anxiety. So then I was going to go to Redbubble and reorder all the stickers that I have to put on my water bottle.
Oh, my God.
Right. Okay. Anyway, this went on for like 3 days of me doing this back and forth. And then I was like, I just need to, this is giving me anxiety.
You're actually insane.
Okay. So I'm at work. My water bottle's in my backpack. My backpack is like a stiff backpack. So it's like always open. Like I don't ever shut it because I don't really need to.
Yeah.
But I forgot my badge. So I leaned over my car to grab into my car to the passenger seat to grab my badge. My water bottle fell out of my backpack, hit me in the fucking head, fell in the parking lot and fucking broke. So I'm glad I didn't put
the
all
bottle
my
part or
on.
The top part.
So this handle cracked.
Yeah. Okay. The clippy.
So
things.
The handle cracked. This doesn't work right anymore. I can still use it, but like the whole purpose I bought this was because I wanted this handle and it cracked. So really, I'm going to probably stop using it. But I was like so thankful I didn't have all my stickers on it.
That's the only reason I actually put the stickers all over my bottle is because the tops I can replace. And like,
I mean,
there's no
I probably
clippy
could.
Thing.
Yeah. It's not like a clip. It's just a handle.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, so that was that. And then my One Tree Hill jersey finally came in the mail that I ordered like 4 months ago.
Why are you not wearing it?
I'm not wearing it. I'm putting it in a fucking frame and putting it on the wall. Oh, it's signed by Chad Michael Murray. I'm not.
He touched it.
He did touch it. I smelt it.
Ew. Did it smell like him?
I don't know what he smells like.
In that case, you want to know what I got in the shop today? You want a question?
Well, is that you don't have anything to tell me?
No, not really. I just am so happy that you remembered my birthday without it being unprompted. Or with it being unprompted.
What the fuck is the question?
The fuck the question is.
The fuck
I don't
the
know.
Question.
I was trying to, it didn't work. Whatever. Your question is, do you think that the sets of horror movies themselves can conjure up some real darkness?
Yes.
Do you care to elaborate?
I feel like I don't have to because my listeners know me. But... yes, we talk about it all the time. manifesting energy, egregores, tulpas, all that stuff. So if you have like a set that's like all dark stuff, actually a lot of movie sets are haunted because of, you know, the movies that have been filmed there in the past. Mm-hmm. So you hear that actually quite often. So I'm assuming you'll go and tell me about a set that's haunted.
Oh, yeah. Not only just haunted, but also cursed. So
bring it on, baby.
1982, Steven Spielberg writes a movie, did not actually direct it, but wrote a movie that came out that captured the entire world in long-lasting fear. 82 horror movie Spielberg. Do you know what it is?
Poltergeist,
baby. Do you know of the weirdness and the curse of the poltergeist? Have you heard of it? Do you know the details?
I don't know the details, but I 100% know that there's a lot of fucked up shit that happened.
Yeah, I would say fucked up shit barely scratches the surface. But
give it to me.
We're going to start with some movie facts first. So like I said, came out in 82, written by Spielberg, but directed by a gentleman named Toby Hooper, basically because Spielberg was working on another movie at the same time. I can't remember which movie it was. I want to say it was E.T., actually.
Ooh.
Or maybe, no, that's too early. I don't remember what it was, but it's another one. They actually almost got it to be directed by Stephen King, which would have been kind of cool. Steve Spielberg and Steve King.
That would have been wild. Then it probably really would have been haunted.
Seriously. I mean, they didn't have any problems with that. Let's be for real. It was immediately, though, really, really successful. It was the top or the eighth most highest grossing movie that year. And, you know, it's still regularly on like the top 100 scariest movies of all time list. It reached cult classic status relatively quickly, so much so that it spurred, you know, two sequels. So there's Poltergeist 2 and 3. All of them have their weird shit.
I guess I didn't realize there was three.
There are three. The third one didn't really like hit maybe that well. Right. Yeah. But I mean, all you have to do is say they're here and people know exactly what you're talking about. Like it's famous. When was the last time you watched the movie?
I think I watched it once when I was little. I was at the babysitter's.
Awesome.
Older kids were watching it. Probably shouldn't have.
It's another one, too, where I watched it like way too young and it terrified me for so long.
Did you rewatch it for this episode?
I did.
Okay, I should rewatch it.
It's worth a rewatch. Obviously, you know, effects from 82 don't hold up, but I loved...
That stuff doesn't bother me. Yeah. I know there are some people that can't watch older stuff because of that. That stuff doesn't bother me.
I think the coolest thing about going back and rewatching it is realizing how much of an effect it's had on other movies. So, like, the entire way all of the Conjuring Universe movies are set up is very poltergeist. So it's, you know, they bring in the parapsychologists, but the way, like, obviously it's not Ed and Lorraine being portrayed in the poltergeist, but the way those characters are is like kind of, you can see how the writing influenced the Conjuring universe.
Gotcha. Okay.
But we'll do like a quick recap of the whole movie and then get into the strangeness.
Cool.
So the official description is strange and creepy happenings beset an average California family, the Freelings. Steve, played by Craig T. Nelson. Diane, played by Jo Beth Williams, teenage daughter Dana, Dominique Dunn, 8-year-old Robbie, Oliver Robbins, and 5-year-old Carol Ann, Heather O'Rourke. When ghosts commune with them through the television set, initially it's friendly and playful, but the spirits turn unexpectedly menacing, and when Carol Ann goes missing, Steve and Diane turn to a parapsychologist and eventually an exorcist for help.
I really don't remember this movie.
Yeah, it was honestly, it was really different than I remembered it, too. So, I mean, it starts off, though, you have your typical American family, right? So it's mom and dad, three kiddos. Dad is, so Steve, he's like that kind of like salesman trope, but you find out he's actually the realtor who sold, he's the top salesman of the development they live in, which is called Cuesta Verde, California.
Okay.
So they have their three kids. Dana, she's the teenager, 16. And then there's Robbie and Carol Ann, 8 and 5, who share a bedroom together. It starts off pretty normal. You know, it's family doing family crap. And then one night, Carol Ann sees some like white lights coming out of the TV, like a mist. And she starts talking into the TV set. So that's the first night.
Do you feel the most powerful and beautiful with the elements of the earth around you? Do you like one-of-a-kind jewelry? Do you sometimes feel like a woodland fairy? Me too. That's why I created Holly and Hemlock, a magical shop filled with handmade wooden jewelry and metaphysical tools. Come check out our enchanting wooden wares at www.hollyhemlock.com and join us in honoring the magic and beauty of nature with each unique creation. That's www.hollyhemlock.com.
Wait, I'm sorry. Who started talking?
Carol Ann, the little 5-year-old.
Little one. Okay.
So then the next night, they're all kind of, I think there's like a storm or something, and they're all in the parents' bedroom, like the two younger kids. And Carol Ann's kind of watching. And it's like, you know, at night when the TV used to switch over to like the static after it played the anthem. So that's happening. And she's looking at it again. And like the entire room starts to shake and things are falling off the wall. The whole room is getting like disheveled. And that's when that like mist comes out of the TV again, hits the wall behind the bed. Everyone wakes up. And then she goes, they're here, the TV people, as Carol Ann calls them at first. So the family's like, okay, was it an earthquake? Was it this? Was it that? You know, trying to figure out what's going on.
Oh, yeah. Earthquake. That makes sense.
Well, because like everything's like thrown around the room, you know?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And it's California, so.
Exactly. I thought you were being sarcastic at first.
No.
So then the next day, they're all kind of eating together and like weird little things are happening, right? So like Robbie looks away for a second and his silverware is twisted and bent.
Oh, that just gave me goosebumps.
Yeah, and like little things start to move. And then the mom makes like a point of making sure, like telling everyone to push their chairs in when they get up and walk away. And so they like turn and the camera goes back and all the chairs are pulled like a couple feet out. Diana's like, what the hell, guys? Stop playing tricks. She pushes them all back in. She talks to Carol Ann for a second. She turns, and then they're all stacked on the table.
Ooh. Ooh,
they're like, you know, what's going on? Whatever. Then they're like, if they set a chair in a certain spot in the kitchen, it would slide across back into the dining room. And Diane's like, you can see she's like excited about this. We're like, we don't know what's going on. She at one point puts a helmet on Carol Ann and sets her in the spot, and she slides across the room. They show the husband. They're like, okay, whatever, this is fun. It's fine. But it starts to like get more sinister. The next night, there's a storm. And like it had kind of alluded to the fact that Robbie was afraid of two things in his room, this giant tree outside, and then this giant stuffed clown that sits at the end of his bed and like stares at him.
I would be terrified of that as well. Why do we have that?
Well, the funny thing is like it starts off like it's like the clown's going to do something. So he throws his jacket over it every night, you know. But what ends up happening is as the storm comes in, the tree breaks into his room, grabs him with its branches and starts trying to eat him.
Okay.
Mom and dad run outside to try to save him from this tree. Mind you, they're also building a swimming pool in the back, so they're very worried the kids are going to fall into this pit.
Okay.
Dad's trying to save him from being eaten by a tree. Nobody is watching Carol Ann, though. In her room, there's a bright light coming from the closet and a vortex sucking everything in and trying to, like, pull her in.
Okay.
Anyways, the tree, they save Robbie from the tree somehow. The tree gets sucked up into the sky in a tornado, so now they think it's a tornado.
Like, you're like, anyway, anyway.
Carol Ann does get sucked into her closet and disappears. So they go, like, throughout the house. Everyone's trying to find her. Nobody can. But then they start hearing her. Like a disembodied voice.
Oh.
So she's saying, mommy, like, I can't see. Okay. So like they try to ask the neighbors if anything weird happened, you know, but they're trying not to like seem crazy.
But their child is still missing.
Anyway, they go to the cops. The cops, they find like a parapsychologist and they come in and it's like very much like I was saying, The Conjuring. You know, they set up all their equipment. They're going to debunk. They're going to do this. And what they start to show her is a couple things, right? Apportation, is that right? Where like items just fall out of nowhere?
Oh,
in that movie they were calling it bilocation because it was coming from a different location to this one. They showed them the kids' room, which was just all their items are just swirling in a vortex in the room. Nobody goes in there. They just keep it locked.
So it's consistently swirling?
Oh, yeah, just consistent. And then they show, like, if they turn that static on the TV, they can start to have a conversation with Carol Ann, but they can't find her, like, physically find her.
This is like Stranger Things.
That's where I was saying there's actually some tie-ins to Stranger Things as we get further into. Like, you can see how it's really
affected other.
Yeah, inspired a lot of other things.
Yeah.
Things get weirder and weirder, right? So as the investigators are there longer, like, one guy, he's in the bathroom, and he has this vision of him ripping his own face off. Another guy goes to like get food and it turns to maggots, you know, typical horror movie trope. They're seeing these apparitions fully manifest. The parapsychologists are like, hey, listen, this is like above what we can do. So they bring in the one, the only, the lovely exorcist named Tangina. She's amazing, by the way. I guess she was actually like a medium in real life, and they just brought her in and were like, you're actually, they wanted to like consult with a medium, and they're like, actually, you're just going to be in the movie.
But was this, that was her real name?
In the movie, it's Tangina. I can't, her real name, I've got it further down in the notes.
Okay, that's fine. Who came up with that name?
I don't know.
And,
okay. Anyways, what they're finding is that there's tons of angry spirits in this house who don't know they're dead, and Carol Ann needs to lead them to the light, but she can't go into the light because then she'll cross over and she can't come back.
Okay. That's a lot for a five-year-old.
All this is happening. Steve is like with his boss, and his boss is like, hey, you're the number one salesman. Great job. Like, I'm going to show you the new development. And they go there, and it's like overlooking the one they live in. And there's a cemetery. He's like, oh, well, we'll just move these bodies. Steve's like, you can't do that. He goes, well, we did that where you live.
No. Oh, cute.
Yeah.
Okay. First off, hold on. Can I just, whatever. If you were, I don't care if you're a top salesman or not, your child's missing. You ain't going to work.
So it was like, I can't remember the exact reason, because he was like calling out of work and saying he had the flu because he was like really freaked out.
Okay.
So it was before it got like super intense, but there's some reason he had to go meet with his boss.
Okay.
So anyways, though, they get back at the house, like tons of commotion going on. So the medium Tangina, or the exorcist Tangina, basically comes up with the plan, right? She finds out that the bilocation is happening for items that go into the closet. They're coming out of the ceiling in the living room.
Oh, okay.
So this closet is some portal, but she also says there's like one main angry evil spirit who wants to keep Carol Ann and like keep all the spirits there.
Okay.
So one who's like pushing back on, you know, everyone else being saved and going into the light. Okay. So basically the only way they can do this is with love. Obviously, they have to tie a rope to Diane, send her in. Once Carol Ann gets everyone to go to the light, and then, of course, they fall through the living room ceiling in this. It's very dramatic. Are they dead? Are they not dead? They're alive. It's fine. But Carol Ann helped everyone cross over. And
Okay. The
movie starts to end with Steve's going to go quit his job. He's going to stick it to the boss. And they're all moving and packing up the house. And everyone's happy. So and the house calmed down, right? Because they saved the day. Mm-hmm. So Diane is like, okay, well, he's like, I just got to go take care of some things, you know, stay here with the kids. I'll come back and we'll leave. And he specifically says, if the kids start to get tired, you know, just let them conk out. That way they'll sleep in the car. So it's getting late. Diane takes a bath and then she goes into her room. The kids are in their room and like shit hits the fan 10 times worse than it ever has before. So now out of the closet is very Stranger Things. Like it opens and it's a mouth and it's trying to suck the kids in. And Diane is getting spun around the ceiling of her room. She realizes like she needs to get these fucking kids out, right? So she bursts into their room. Or no, before she does that, she's trying to save them because they're like getting sucked in there. So I think she goes outside for help and gets locked out of the house. Like the house locks her out as it's trying to suck the kids into this giant mouth now that's in their closet, and this giant demon comes out of it at one point. It's all over the top.
Yeah.
As she's in the backyard, she falls into the pool pit. And
of course
skeletons start coming out, you know, because what they find out, Steve pulls up at this point with his boss. I don't know. So Diane comes, like, she finally gets freed of all these skeletons trying to pull her back in the pool. She's running around like coffins are coming out of the ground and skeletons are falling out of that.
Oh my.
And Steve looks at his boss and he's like, you didn't just move the graveyard, you only moved the headstones, like, you asshole. So all the bodies are still buried under the development. So Okay. Now we know why it's haunted, and of course it's going for the top salesman, right? And in the nick of time, they get the kids out of the house. Diane had gotten back in there. His bodies are coming through the floor of their house. She gets everyone out. They yell at the demon. And as they come out of the house, like, the entire house sucks into a vortex and just like disappears. And then the family drives off.
Okay.
Okay. So now that you have a refresher on everything that happened, let's go through... Do you want to go through the weirdness, or do you want to go through some movie facts? Do you need like a palate cleanser?
No, I mean, I don't care, however you want to do it. I'm just thinking that this doesn't seem like a poltergeist. So it's weird that we're...
Okay, so that's the last of the movie fact that I have. It's not a poltergeist. Oh. Poltergeists are not Okay, so commonly, yes, they were thought of as being spirits that can move things around, but I think more parapsychologists, as research has gone, now it was believed they were spirits in the 80s. Now we know that poltergeists are really psychic energy, so this would be more of, like, I would say an intelligent spirit mixed with demonic possession. Mm-hmm. Like I said, though, it was super, super popular. You already asked me, I said I watched it last week. It holds up pretty well. It's got a couple scares. I think, like, the biggest part, though, is it's, like, especially because it was before everything else, it was really, really original of a story.
Yeah.
When I said it was the 8th top grossing movie that year, in 1982, it actually brought in over $76 million, which is...
Do you know what that's converted to?
I don't, but it's a lot more than $76
million. Yeah. Well, yeah.
But it's, like, there's something about, like, not only the influence this movie has, right, on horror movies going forward, like, you could almost say it's, like, it's kind of haunted horror movies in its own way. It was actually really, really fucking haunted and caused a lot of bad things. So there's a lot of stuff that was starting to happen on and around the set. Then in people who were working on the show or the movie's homes. Mm-hmm. And then in, like, an entire slew of deaths. So just so you know what's coming. One of the first oddities that were starting to happen with the filming was on set. So that clown that I said, like, at the beginning of the movie didn't do anything. At that culminating scene, when everything's going crazy, Robbie goes to look out the window. Remember, he was afraid of the tree. So he's like, oh, is the tree going to come back? And he turns around and the clown wraps its arm around him and pulls him under the bed and starts choking him.
Oh. God, I'm not watching this movie.
That scene was actually filmed in reverse and then played reverse. So, like, in the 80s, it's hard to have a clown doll drag him under the bed. So this whole, it was tied to this whole contraption that it would actually come out and then unwrap his neck.
Got you.
Supposed to be really safe. Except Oliver Robbins, who played Robbie, was actually choked by the clown. So when he's under the bed waiting for that film to, like, start the scene so they could start to move in reverse.
Yeah.
The arm actually got stuck around his neck and started choking him. And remember, he's under a bed.
Under the bed.
When this is happening, thank God there was one producer who was sitting off and who could kind of see, like, see? Robbie really clearly. Or Oliver is his real name. See Oliver, you know. And he was able to notice that the kid was actually, like, not playing struggling. Around, like, he was struggling and trying to pull the arm off. He ends up pulling Oliver out and out of harm's way. And Oliver Robbins actually says, like, who knows what might have happened otherwise? It all happened so fast. And I didn't think anything could have happened with this. But who knows? Maybe if they didn't see it, I wouldn't be here today.
Yikes.
Okay.
I would not want to have to do that scene again.
Yeah, right? And remember our friend Tangina?
Oh, God.
Her real name is Zelda Rubinstein, which is even cooler yet.
Zelda. I love the name.
Zelda Rubinstein. I knew I had her name down in my notes here. You know, actors don't live at home when they're filming. Mm-hmm. Okay. And she wasn't really an actress or anything. She was just a medium who ended up getting pulled into the movie. And during the filming, she had a dream where her dog came to visit her.
Okay.
And the dog in the dream spoke like a human and looked at her and said goodbye. When she woke up, she had received a phone call from home letting her know that her dog had passed away and nobody could really knew why.
So I don't know if I would attribute that to the movie, though, or the set, just because she's already like a medium type of person. So that could have just been coincidental.
I was with you on that, too, except for the fact that they can't really pinpoint why the dog passed. Like, it wasn't an old dog. It wasn't a hurt dog.
Yeah. I don't know.
During the filming of the second movie, when Zelda comes back, there is another premonition she gets where her mom and her dog come to say goodbye.
Oh, no.
Her mom did pass. Now, whether this one's part of the curse or the haunting, she found it out after filming. But they figured out the time that she did pass lined up perfectly with this really weird shot from the film. Mm-hmm. Where they were getting an unexpected light anomaly right in front of Zelda.
Weird. So it's probably her mom.
Probably her mom. So I'm kind of with you on that one. Those two are...
Could just be coincidental. But that is weird.
Debatable.
Both.
But both movies, somebody filming. Close to her died.
Yeah, that's strange.
Okay. Some of the stuff that started to happen then outside of the set. And this is like, we're not even going to get into everything or every death. We just don't have time.
Yeah, I just can't.
But people's houses started to get haunted. So Jo Beth Williams, who played Diane, the mom... Or Diana, she had crazy things start to happen around her own home. So her bed would shake, just like her bed shook in the first movie. Where she'd come home and things would be like askew or moved around, like really similar to what her character was actually going through.
Interesting.
She started to get this like feeling that whatever was in her home didn't want her to do the film.
Oh, huh.
Dominique Dunn, who played the teenage daughter, she came into her house one day and watched her bookshelf tip over as all the books flew off the shelf at her. But it's like, you know, when something's tipping, right, those books would go down and not fly at.
Yeah, so that doesn't make sense at all.
Then there was James Caan. James Caan wasn't actually in the film. He was hired by Spielberg to write the novel alongside the film. So Spielberg wrote like the screenplay for the movie, but he hires this man to write like an actual novel to go along with it, because screenplays and novels are written very different. James Caan and his assistant are working in Spielberg's office late one night when the building gets hit by lightning and all the lights go out.
Oh.
Then the lights come back on, and as they do, the AC came out of the window and hits James Caan.
What?
Which, think about that, a window unit AC. If you open a window, it's falling out of the window.
This seems like some cartoon, what's the...
Acme.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the piano's falling on people?
Yeah.
Spielberg's office also had a lot of, like, video and arcade games.
What they
so as the lights came back on, every one of the games came on and were going off full blast. And not only that, like that's not too weird after lightning,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The games started playing themselves. So Mr. Caan and his assistant ran from the building.
See, this type of stuff to me seems more Poltergeist than the actual movie Poltergeist.
Exactly. But I think it's so weird that it's like things that were happening in the movie are mimicking what's happening in the actors' lives to an extent. But it's like, just like where it started off, like, you know, kind of light, things are getting more and more malicious.
Sinister, yeah.
So throughout the filming of the first and the second movie and into the third, things for all the actors and production staff, your typical hauntings, right? Lights turning on and off, electronics not working at home and dying. Some are seeing apparitions of women wearing, like a woman wearing all black.
Mm.
So like I basically all your typical haunting tropes are happening. A lot of people are hurt. In like so kind of like Robbie where like sets that go wrong, so like there's an explosion that almost maimed two guys' legs.
Ooh.
Any scene that was like uncomfortable to film too, so they weren't only getting like hurt from special effects going wrong, but like, you know, scenes that aren't fun, like vomiting scenes or whatever, like that would put the actors in like physical uncomfortable situations, the cameras would always fuck up and glitch out, and they would have to do these scenes over and over and over again. This starts to get so bad in the second filming, and at one point they're in a cave, and everyone has this uneasiness, to where one of the actors literally got permission to do an exorcism on the set itself to, like, try to lighten things up.
Dang.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's... I think there's enough there that it's beyond coincidental, right? Like,
well,
Zelda, because, yes, could be coincidental, but yeah, when you're having that many things happen.
Right. And if your voice just happened.
I know.
If you were to go to any other set or ask any other set of something else and be like, how many things went wrong? It would be nothing like what you're telling us. Like,
exactly. Yeah. And Spielberg, during these movies, he had a lot of actors, right? Like your typical actors, but he also did a lot of like finding people who weren't necessarily actors. So like, you know, you're bringing in an actual medium. Now you're giving somebody who probably has never done an exorcism in their life the actual you know what I mean? So or permission to do it.
Yeah, no. So like you're somebody that has like power is not the right verbiage, but you know what I mean? Like that spiritual, that type of power, I guess you could call it. And then even though you're acting, quote unquote, you're still putting that out into the universe. You're still...
Yeah, so you're manifesting. You're bringing somebody who's a natural amplifier of these energies.
I'm surprised she did it. Like, I'm surprised she said yes. Like, I guess I would feel like... I mean, it's definitely a different time. I was going to say it's a different time, but I feel like Now, if that were a case, I would imagine, unless you like really need money or something, I just would imagine somebody like that would be like, yeah, no, that's not a great idea. Like, no.
So where are you sitting now? Curse or coincidence or somewhere in the middle?
I think curse for sure. But I do think that maybe her Zelda with her family members might be a coincidence.
Okay. That's fair. I'll give that one to you. Let's get into the deaths.
Okay.
Like I said, I don't even have time to cover all of them. I think we've got, I've got five for you. Some of the others would be like literally finding production people on set dead in their car.
Oh my God.
It just like crazy happenstance. So there's more than just these. But the first kind of the victim that we're going to highlight from the Poltergeist film is Dominique Dunn.
Oh my God.
So remember, the movie came out in 82.
Mm-hmm.
Dominique Dunn was born November 23rd, 1959. She played the teenage daughter, Dana.
Mm-hmm.
She was in quite a few films before, you know, this was her last one. But she was in Diaries of a Teenage Hitchhiker, The Shadow Riders. She was in a few TV series. So in 1982, though, very shortly after the movie comes out, she had gotten into an argument with an ex-boyfriend in the driveway of her West Hollywood home on October 30th.
Mm.
As a result of the argument, he began to strangle her, and he was so intense with it that he put her into a coma.
Yikes.
5 days later, on November 4th, Dominique passes away.
And how old was she?
She was 27 at the time.
Ugh.
Her boyfriend, charged with and convicted of involuntary manslaughter, and he spends a total of 3.5 years in prison for his crime.
Fuck that.
I know. Just disgusting. 80s
Jesus
again.
Jesus Christ. That's fucked up.
It's really fucked up. And if that was a one-off, I don't think it'd be like that shocking. Or it's shocking, but you wouldn't relate it back to the film.
Yeah, no.
Right. But once we start to add in everything else, like, it becomes a little more than just coincidence.
Mm.
Our next victim is Julian Beck. Beck was born May 31st, 1925. He was an actor, a stage director, a poet, and a painter.
Mm, very creative.
He's actually in the second movie. So he plays Henry Kane, who is the malevolent preacher.
Malevolent preacher.
Not a good guy, right?
Okay.
Right before the filming starts, Julian is diagnosed with stomach cancer.
Oh.
Progresses oddly quickly through the filming, through the whole filming of the movie, the second movie. In 1985, he actually passes from complications due to the cancer.
Mm.
Just about the same time he wraps up his final scenes. So he died in 85. The movie doesn't even come out until 86. So throughout the filming, he got like progressively worse very quickly and then passed away within days of wrapping up his shots.
Mm.
So Julian Beck was 61 years old at the time of his passing.
So sad.
And then, like I promised you, the line would be in here. Our next poor, unfortunate soul. If you haven't listened to last week's episode, I got very upset when Kara, because I had already had mine written and we used the same Ursula line.
Yeah, cute Ursula and her eels.
So our next poor, unfortunate soul is William Sampson. This dude had a life, okay? So he was born September 1933.
Oh.
He was a painter, an actor, and a rodeo performer, which he did rodeos for 20 freaking years. So
cool. Wow.
Have you ever watched and or read One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, a famous Kubrick film?
I haven't, and I need to watch it.
Have you ever seen the cover of it?
Probably,
or any clips from it where you see Chief Bromden, the big Indian guy?
Is that
in that
him?
Movie?
Is that
that's him?
Okay.
Yeah. He was in some other like Western style movies, ton of stuff, right? But so he's also in the second movie. He plays the medicine man. He's Native American. Which I find, right, like the ones who are going, we have the preacher, the medicine man, like they're the ones who are usually the saviors in the real life situations. He had suffered for a long time from a disease called scleroderma, which is it's a degenerative condition that affects like most of your major organs.
Oh, God.
Just like back, though, during the filming of the movie that he is in, it gets worse a lot more quickly than it should.
Huh.
I don't know if this adds any weight to this character's death, but this is also the gentleman who thought that the set had really, really bad energy, and he is the one who performed the exorcism.
Okay.
Shortly after the premiere of the movie in 1986, he drops from 260 pounds to 140 pounds.
What?
Because it had, the disease had gotten so bad, and he needs a heart and lung transplant.
Oh.
And in June of 1987, he passed from post-operative kidney failure, which was the complication of the transplant surgery.
Mm.
So Will Sampson was 53 years old.
Damn.
Now, our next one is... I'm going to let you have your argument. I want you to say if you think this is part of the curse or not.
Okay.
Lou Perryman was an actor in the first one who played Pugsley, which is one of like the assistants of the parapsychologist.
Okay.
He's born in 1941, but he was in a number of other movies like Blues Brothers, Boys Don't Cry, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. Our boy Lou probably thought he had evaded the curse from the movie until 2009.
Okay.
He's in his home in Austin.
Wait, so he was
Texas.
In the second movie?
He was in the first.
Oh, okay.
The one that came out in 82. So okay. He's done other movies since, like, he was in Texas Chainsaw Massacre too. I think that's where you're getting the two
from. Oh, yeah. Okay.
So he's in his house in Austin, Texas, and he hears kind of like a commotion. He sees somebody trying to steal his car. He goes outside, and a man named Seth Tatum murders him with an axe.
That escalated quickly.
Yeah. So Seth was recently released from prison. He was on a concoction of alcohol and drugs. He was trying to steal Perryman's car totally by chance because he had just burglarized another home. And then the cops found out about this because Tatum showed up to a jail nearby later that day and just went up to officials and he goes, "I'm pretty sure I just killed the owner of the car I just stole."
Oh, okay.
And then they go and find Lou's body.
I don't know.
What are your thoughts?
I don't know. Do you have more to tell me?
I have more. I held back something on this one, so I need you to like actually put your thoughts together.
Well, did he take something from the set or something?
No.
Okay. I don't know. I'm just thinking that it could be because like we kind of have talked about other cursed objects, and I don't know. I have a hard time with this one only because I'm thinking if he took something that might make sense because, you know, I don't know.
The way I pieced it together, and I didn't find this from anywhere online, but in the movie, he is one of the assistants of the parapsychologist who he's the one who he's in the bathroom and he has this like premonition of ripping his own face off.
Okay.
After that, he's
did
just
he get
never
axed
in
the face.
Not no, he just peels it off.
No. But I know. But did he end up getting axed?
It was bad. It was axed kind of everywhere.
Okay.
The next time the parapsychologist is talking to the parents, like the next day, they're like, "Pugsley is not coming back. Like he is too freaked out. He ran." So I'm like, did he like run his character run, and then it like kind of caught up with him later, sort of deal? Like I don't know if maybe there's a line to draw there. It's definitely a reach, but.
Yeah, I don't know.
Still very strange.
It is definitely strange. I think so. Like with curses, they don't necessarily all make sense as to the when and the where, the why. Like, you know what I mean? Like why that
like
person,
some final
what
destination
time.
Shit.
Exactly. So I could definitely say, it could definitely be for sure part of that curse. But I don't know.
And it like, just seem it's really one weird. Thing if it's one or two people. We're up to four stories right now that you've heard. Two others that we're not even covering, like the guy found in his car, and we have one major actress left. So it's just too much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The final victim that we're going to cover, at least, probably the saddest. Mm. And this is Heather O'Rourke, who was born December 27th, 1976.
Okay.
Her older sister, Tammy, was an actress.
Okay.
And Tammy, Heather, and her mom one day are eating at eating lunch together at a restaurant near the set of another film that Tammy, her older sister, was filming in. Spielberg's also eating here. And remember I told you he just was kind of finding people for the Poltergeist film? So he clocks Heather and thought that she would be a perfect fit for the casting of a young, really pretty girl named Carol Ann for his film, The Poltergeist.
Oh, no.
So Carol Ann, she's actually in all three films.
Okay.
Sadly, after the second movie came out, she was diagnosed with Crohn's disease, which is like bowel, irritable bowel.
Awful.
But it's awful. But she starts to present with a lot of the symptoms that are very similar to Crohn's. What we find out later really happened is that she had been drinking the well water from her home and contracted giardiasis, which is like, you know, giardia, the bacteria, or the parasite.
Oh, poor girl. So they weren't even treating her for the right thing.
So she does not have a chronic bowel disease. She has a parasite. During the third movie, she's being treated with cortisone injections.
Okay.
To treat the Crohn's. Even though she's not presenting symptoms, they think these injections are keeping the Crohn's away. They make her really self-conscious, though, because it makes her face swell. And she's really, really upset about that. Because these are really, really, really strong steroidal injection that, you know, 76, what, in 82, she's 6?
She's my God.
10, 11, 12 by the last one.
Yeah, 10 or 11. Oh, my God.
On January 31st, 88, so she would be 12. She is at home and she gets really, really sick and collapses. They think it's influenza. So she's rushed to the hospital. And on the way, she suffers cardiac arrest.
Oh, my God.
She's airlifted to another children's hospital in San Diego. And as they're trying to, like, work on her for that, there's a bowel obstruction. And she actually dies during an operation after the cardiac arrest where they were trying to correct the bowel obstruction.
Oh, my God.
So here's what's really strange here. Daniel Hollander, who's the head of gastroenterology at University of California Irvine Medical Center, so like huge medical facility, states that O'Rourke's death was distinctly unusual as she lacked any of the prior symptoms of a bowel defect. He would have expected her to have a lot of digestive difficulties, like throughout her life, if it was congenital or like leading up to this, that was indicative of obstruction.
Right.
So she collapses from something that's like the flu. Throughout the, you know, all the movies, they think she has giardia, but it, or the giardia parasite, or she has that, but it's actually Crohn's. So she probably still had the parasite. She's suffering cardiac arrest. She's on all these steroids.
And I'm sorry, when did they actually figure out that she had that parasite? Like after she died?
That part I couldn't quite figure out, but I would imagine it was probably during the autopsy. So, I mean, she's like the main actress of the movies. You know what I mean? Like she is pretty much the main character. She's in all three of them and she dies when she's 12 of like, you can't even say she died of one thing. It's all these things that just don't make sense together. Okay.
That's wild.
Now that we're through all the deaths, coincidence or curse?
I mean, it's a curse.
What do you think caused it?
Zelda.
I would argue that she was probably an energy amplifier. Mm-hmm. You hit on another theory a little bit earlier, like the manifestation or tulpas or thought forms, all that, right? Like we're around a lot of dark topics. You're in it all the time.
Do you know what other movies were filmed on that set?
I don't, but I know something about the set that I haven't told you.
Didn't somebody kill themselves? Like hang themselves or something?
Or am I very likely. I didn't cover all the deaths. That I think you might be thinking Wizard of Oz.
No. I know that one. There's a set.
It's related to deaths that happened before.
It might be a different movie, but I think there was a set before the movie filmed that somebody had like hung themselves in the set. Anyway,
you might have a whole new theory, but what I withheld from you is so the end of the movie, when all the bodies start popping out of the ground, 1982, before we're very heavy into plastics, skeletons are very hard and expensive to recreate from rubber.
I did know this. They used real skeletons.
They used real fucking skeletons.
Mm-hmm. I did know this.
That the actors did not know until after.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you imagine?
So Joe Beth Williams, who kept... No.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Beth, who kept thinking somebody was telling her not to film this movie. I don't know. Maybe the real skeleton she went swimming with.
Mm-hmm. Can you imagine when she found out?
Oh, my God. So you've now... I can't imagine they were donated. So you've probably somehow gotten these bodies exhumed or whatever. You put them on a film that is hugely popular. And you have all these actors and people and a real life medium working in these sets. Dealing with all these dark topics. I mean, literally the story, fairy tales have a lesson. The lesson of the movie, right, is don't disturb the dead to build your perfect neighborhood, you know, like respect people's resting grounds. And you distinctly
The funny
go
part
against is, the lesson of the movie you're filming
was just
to
say,
create
the funny
a
part
scene.
Is that's literally the whole movie, really.
Yeah, it's beyond ironic, right? So no wonder, you know, and why it goes into the second and third movie. Like you've literally pissed off spirits by doing to them what you're warning not to do in your movie.
That is actually really ridiculous.
Damn disrespectful. So most people are in agreement that this is actually what caused the curse.
No, for sure. That makes sense. But yeah, I definitely think that Zelda's energy and like what she probably practiced or, you know, whatever, definitely amplified, if not like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Ugh, dummies.
Now, I will say there was the I completely meant to put his name in my notes. I forgot to do it. I wanted to leave you with one. There is a survivor.
Oh my God. Just one.
Somebody who survived, who was in the first movie, who actually survived a plane crash.
Yikes. Okay.
So I don't know if it's like a Final Destination thing. He better
like
be.
Like it'll get him at, is he alive?
Bathing still? In his sage and Florida water every night. And ooh.
I wonder if he's still alive.
Yeah. I should give an update on that one. Maybe at the beginning of the next episode, I should have put it in there, but you know.
Yeah. How he ended.
There's a lot to that curse already.
Jeez.
So yeah, that's the curse of the Poltergeist movie.
Yeah, it's definitely cursed for sure. Yeah, let's not use
real bodies.
Yeah, let's not.
Good Lord. I mean, even if they decided to donate their bodies, right? Like it was probably donated for science, not to be put on a movie that is still being watched regularly today.
Can you imagine watching that film? And it be like one of your loved ones or something, and that's their skeleton. Oh, I mean, God. You probably wouldn't know because, like you said, you can't imagine right. It was they were donated willingly. But can you? Because you know that happened
for sure. It happened. It's just wild. And like that was a call to Spielberg. And look at how many people's lives you've now affected.
That's insane. So, there's other movies that have used real.
And there's like. When you start to look into cursed movies, there are so many, and it makes sense when you break it down.
It does.
Like, anyways.
Yeah.
With that, if there are any other cursed movies you want us to cover, we're still at writing in. We'll
or
figure out a way
curses.
For you to call in and leave voice memos soon. That's going to happen.
Yeah.
Any curses, any stories you want to hear? We would absolutely love. We ask you every week. Tell us your thoughts and your feelings and your reactions on Spotify and Apple. The reviews truly do help us. So, you know, if you are appreciating what we're doing here, leave us some nice words. We need our egos boosted.
Some encouragement.
Yeah. Tell Kara she's pretty as always. And what else should they do before we close the shop up?
That's really it. Just keep listening. And most importantly, creep it real, eyeballs.
Goodbye.
Bye.